If you didn't have enough of our conversation yesterday when Jeff Warren was here, enough talk about the St. Helena School Board, the former St. Helena School Superintendent, and all the goings-on up there, well, you're going to get more of it today. We're going to talk to the other side in this whole discussion about the recall, and even more than that, some of the subsequent issues that have emerged with respect to the St. Helena Unified School District. Here joining us today, we have in studio Kevin Alfaro, Gene DeVincenzi, and Kathy Zelazny. Thank you all three of you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Well,
and
you.
Kathy, I hope I pronounced your name right.
You did.
I got
that
right.
That's correct.
Well, first of all, I want to ask the three of you, and I will just sort of go through, starting with you, Kathy, you know, sort of who you are and how you got into this whole discussion. What is it that you saw happening? What is it you saw happening with respect to the school board, to this deal that was made with the former superintendent and the former principal of the high school? What is it that got you involved in this?
Well, I mean, you know, I was one of those parents who didn't look too far beyond the classroom and the playground with my kids. And, you know, I just didn't know what was going on. And then this whole issue came up around April 9th when Superintendent Gordon announced his retirement. And the next day, the board comes out and appoints Rob Haley. This whole rush and this complete rejection of let's do a search, when the parents who actually knew about the special board meeting were able to go to the board meeting and said, you need to do a search. And the board ignored them and went ahead and appointed Haley. And, you know, this outcry came out. And that's sort of how I became interested in it and said, you know, they did what? And that's how I initially became interested in what was going on with the board.
Uh-huh. Gene?
I've been involved in a lot of the different parent groups. And I'm the president of the site council at the elementary school. And I've been involved different administrator meetings, been meeting with Alan Gordon once a month, and I've been watching and listening and talking to people, and I didn't jump into anything quickly. I watched and I listened and I watched everything unfold with the when Alan Gordon retired, and I sat back and was quiet for a while, but then I think what really pushed me over the edge is when I started hearing some of the personal stories kind of beyond it all, and the passion that people were really bringing to the table made me really want to get more involved and look into the more legal aspect of things.
Kevin?
I got involved about a year ago when I joined the parent group. I've been pretty removed from the educational process of my three children who are in the district. My wife has done a lot of that legwork, and as I heard stories and became more involved and had my own dealings with the school district administration and saw how they handled certain issues and matters and how certain conduct and communication was not happening within the administration to the parents, I found that disturbing. So I got more involved, and as I got to know more of the parents, including Gene and Kathy, I found certain things within the culture of the administration that I didn't care for. And the whole thing with putting Haley in without an open search in the process of that really kind of set it off for me.
What was it in the culture? What did you see or sense or observe that was going on in the culture that seemed to be consistent with ultimately what would happen with respect to appointing Haley without a search?
Well, I mean, the culture that I saw wasn't a lot of communication with the parents. Questions were being asked. They weren't being answered. Emails were not being responded to. Phone calls were not being returned. Information was not forthcoming in spite of the fact we'd asked for it. And it just, as things went on, you just became a little suspicious that why aren't they being more forthcoming with information? And the lack of response and the unwillingness to work together just made me a little bit more curious about how things were operating.
Right. Gene, talk a little bit about the recall effort, how that whole movement started to evolve out of the decision of the board to do what it did with Haley.
Well, I think parents started to gather in groups to talk about concerns, and we started to get a little bit more organized about what were the specific concerns. In addition to what Kevin said, there's a lot of other concerns that we have about what's been going on. And I think kind of the natural progression as we gathered more and more supporters was, well, what do we do now? Mm-hmm. Is it, I know I reached out to some of the administrators that I felt comfortable with and had more dialogues and tried to see, you know, how can we fix this? And then it was, what are our options? And I think over time we just came to the conclusion that we had to do something now. And we couldn't wait for the regular process. It's a big step, and we appreciate that. None of us took it lightly. We don't want to spend extra money. We don't want to divide our community, although we decided it really was already divided.
Talk about that, and any of you feel free to chime in on this issue, because it's an issue that has been raised here on this program, not just by people that are on either side of this issue, but by other folks in St. Helena, that the recall effort was arguably divisive to the community.
Well, I think there was already a lot of divisiveness. I mean, I don't think that this group for the recall felt like there was any other way. We had gotten to a point where we had been trying to communicate with these board members, and it was like banging your head against the wall. And you started to think, wait, these are our elected officials. They should be listening to their constituents. And they weren't, and they shut us off, and they dismissed us. And it just started to feel like, you know what? We're trying to work with them. They won't work with us. And, you know, there wasn't any other way. And it already felt like people were divided about it, you know. And so it was already there before this recall effort started.
There were a few vocal voices. It has been going for a while. And it all started around the special ed program. And special ed, by its very nature, won't have a lot of students in it. So there's very few parents who are willing to speak up. And it's pretty well documented. If you go back a couple of years, even probably even more than that, there's been a core group of folks, not very many of them, who are willing to speak out. And as the issue started to evolve beyond special ed, whether it's the replacement of Gordon or other processes or the PARS retirement or whatever it may be, the ground began to swell and people started to come together. It had similar stories, different contexts, but different types of stories of same type of handling of issues.
Given that these problems, and Kevin, you say you've been involved in this for a year, given that these problems have been,
personally
in your
involved
view,
for a year.
Right, that these problems have been percolating for a while, why was it, in your view, that the last time board members ran for re-election, they ran unopposed? Why did nobody else jump in the race?
Well, I mean, I can speak for myself that there was a certain amount of complacency. My issues were I was afraid to speak out. I didn't want to be the only person speaking at every board meeting. The board meetings were seldom attended by very few people. So when you had an issue, you were there alone. So I just think there was a certain amount of complacency. The few people that I thought had issues, although there's a heck of a lot more, were afraid to come out by themselves. And, you know, as this thing became beyond our own personal issues and it became more of a process and what we thought it was a culture problem, you know, people started to come together.
Before we pick up where we left off yesterday and get into the current situation, I want us to talk about something that you just said, because it is something that I hear repeatedly with respect to issues in St. Helena, with particularly regard to the school board, is people being afraid to speak out. What's that all about, Kathy?
Well, I mean, look at the current situation. You know, we went to a couple of board members with concerns about some information we found out about the PARS retirement plan. We went there because, in good faith, so that we didn't want to blindside them in the middle of a board meeting, and we wanted to share this information with them. And now, a week later, we've been subjected to personal attacks and false accusations. And, I mean, that's why people are afraid, because there's no give and take. It's we're right, you're wrong, and you're wrong for being wrong, you know? And it's it's just, you know, that's why people are afraid, because, you know, they try to bring their concerns up, and they try to talk about what is going on, and instead, they get attacked.
And the longer I've been involved in this, maybe there might have been a turning point for me personally where, you know, something could have happened and I might have changed my mind. I really try to see everything from all perspectives, but the longer I became involved, the more people reached out to me. We'd hold different events here or there, or potluck dinners, and the stories they're just so widespread. I just personally couldn't look at these people in the eye who were experiencing. They were afraid. So many people said, "I really hope this recall is successful, but I am not going to put my name down as a supporter because I need to get my kids through high school. I need to get those letters of recommendation, and I can't do it if I am listed as someone who supports the recall." And that, to me, you know, this freedom of speech. Let us say what we want to say without fear of retaliation, and that's not what we're living
in. What was the fear, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but what was the fear of retaliation? What was everybody afraid of?
I think it was different things for different people, whether it's, you know, not getting into the class that your kid wants to get into, or programs being cut, or just physically somebody looking at you and staring you in the eye, and just, I mean, it's really scary when someone looks at you with a menacing stare, and it just stops your heart, and and if you're not a strong, confident person, you don't know how to deal with that.
Yeah,
and
I
that's
can,
scary.
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off. I can think of three different things: legal action against parents, denial of inter-district transfers, being held to a different standard because you're an inter-district transfer person, some intimidation to the Hispanic community because they're not really well represented. Those things cross many different walks of life, and, you know, it's not just one thing.
All right, let's bring it up to the current set of issues that we spent a lot of time, as you all know, talking about yesterday. And the memo that you all individually, collectively prepared, outlining particularly the Parr situation with respect to Alan Gordon and Jim Zoll. How did that document come about? And then talk a little bit about this desire to set a meeting with at least two members of the board. It couldn't be more than that, because obviously it would have been a Brown Act violation,
right,
if there were more than two of them. How did that all evolve? Any of you want to take
It all evolved. I think Sharon Harris sort of started scratching the surface on this whole retirement plan, and she said, you know, something just doesn't sound right to me on this. And so she started looking into it, and when she found what she thought was enough evidence to go to somebody about it, she contacted the three of us and said, you guys, this is what I found. You know, we need to look into this. We need to verify it, and we need to do our research on it. And so that's when the four of us kind of got together and said, okay, we're going to research this. We're going to get all the documentation on it. We're going to go through it, and we're going to see what's going on and if there's anything untoward.
Yeah. Since early May, I had been asking for a lot of financial information from the district. And as that started to come out, and as I was unable to get information, and then Sharon came forward and had some more information, things kind of came together in terms of there's something going on, at least we thought. And repeated requests for PARS information or repeated requests for financial information going not responded to was part of the start of the whole memo.
Mm-hmm. And my understanding is, and I don't know if this initiated with all of you, but that the St. Helena Star and Doug Ernst specifically had requested some financial information from the district and the district wasn't very forthcoming in providing that information either.
As far as I know, right.
Yeah, I'd read that in the paper, but that was completely independent of our experiences.
Right, it had nothing to do with what you were all doing.
Yeah.
You prepared the memo, you detailed all of the information, which we'll talk about as we move along here, and you requested this meeting. Who made the phone call? How did that come about?
Well, I think what happened, when we pulled this together It took us a long time to pull it together, and we really just got kind of the last piece of the puzzle on Monday, which was 2 days before we set this meeting. And we were going to bring it public. That was always the plan, and in fact had shared the information with a number of community members and otherwise. So it already had been shared. And I think that I felt that the right thing to do was – to share the information. I felt like looking at all the information and all the facts that there was a possibility that Cindy Warren and Cynthia Lane didn't know about this. And that would be pretty horrifying to be in a public meeting and to have this memo dropped on you, because it is hard to understand. It's very complicated. And it was that desire to be nice.
What led you to believe, and again, any of you, feel free to jump in, what led you to believe that Cynthia and Cindy may not have known about this, and why did you think other board members did?
The key for me was when the conflict of interest issue came up and Alan was officially added to as a beneficiary or participant in the PARS plan, we had emails from Jim Haslip, one to Inez DeLuna and one to Carolyn Martini, where he raised this issue. And because of the Jim Haslip raised this issue with them and said, we need to look into this and we need to get a legal opinion on it. And because of the Brown Act, I thought theoretically they might not have shared it with Cindy and Cynthia. Uh-huh. I mean, if they were following the Brown Act, they wouldn't have. So I thought, well, maybe they were kept in the dark. Nothing ever came of that request for a legal opinion that we knew of anyway, mm-hmm. or that Jim Haslip knew of. So that was what led me to think that they might not have known.
So how was this meeting requested? Because there seems to be some controversy about that. I want you to tell me about it, and then I want to play you some comments that Jeff made yesterday and give you folks a chance to respond.
Yeah, I called. We decided that we thought it would be logical to have Cynthia and Cindy together. And I called Cindy Warren and I said, Cindy, the four of us would like to meet with you and Cynthia to give you some information. We want to have this as an information download.
The four of you, meaning the three of you and Sharon Harris.
Right.
Okay.
Correct. And we want to do this as a courtesy to you, so you're not flat-footed at the meeting tomorrow. And it was really an information download for you. She wanted to talk about it on the phone. I said it wasn't appropriate. I thought it would be more beneficial if we sat face-to-face with all of us, because we all were contributors, and bringing this information together. We thought it would be best if we did it in a neutral spot. So I suggested a house on Taplin Road.
It's my mother's house, and she's not going to be happy that I volunteered.
Yeah,
it's in the media now. But.
No address is given. It's anything that I have.
Yeah, and I honestly didn't care where it was. She suggested the coffee house. I said, well, it's really not a coffee house kind of discussion. I mean, there's the coffee house in Napa St. Helena is very small. It's, you're sitting on top of each other. It just didn't seem appropriate.
Uh-huh.
So I said, whatever. And she said, well, how about my house? I said, fine, we can do it at your house. So we did.
All right. And one of the things that you mentioned a few moments ago, Gene, was that when you prepared this memo before this meeting even took place, that others had seen the memo, that there was never an effort to hide the memo, never an effort to keep it from the public.
Well, I don't think that we had talked with a number of other people. It wasn't a surprise. We were doing our investigations. We were consulting with people.
We were talking with members of the community. We went down and met with Barbara Namco's office about mm-hmm. it, see how much she knew about it.
Are we way off track
here? Yeah, are we way off track? She didn't know. I mean, she knew about the PAR. She hadn't seen mm-hmm. any details. And we discussed it with her to kind of get, you know, her feeling of it. It was going public.
Right. I mean, there was nothing. You weren't keeping this a deep, dark secret.
Absolutely not. The whole point of the thing was is to say, hey, Cindy, Cynthia, this is what we're going to talk about on Thursday's board meeting.
Okay. Let me play you. I'm going to take a break. Not going to take a break, but I'm going to play you a couple of comments that Jeff Warren made in our conversation yesterday and then give you folks a chance to respond. This was in response to the meeting at Taplin Road, and secondly, in response to the idea of this document being public.
The first call was to Cindy, we're going out to 400 Taplin Road. Not even a name, not even somebody's house. I have to tell you, the best part was when...
In your opinion.
In my opinion. When Sharon Harris said, if you don't do what we're asking here, we will go public. I said... That's it. You guys have to do it. You got to do whatever they say. And one of the gals said, is he serious? I said, are you friggin' ridiculous? You're going to be laughed out of town for this. These things here, Jeff, when you go through them. Now, if these dates were right, if the facts, if the gossip.
I think the facts are right.
But the dates are right because Jim Zoll resigned in December. And they say April here. You know, they say it was well known in the community. That's gossip. That is, that's hearsay. Whether he resigned the day he resigned, that's when he resigned. I mean, if they deny that they said that, or we will go public, in my humble opinion, that will be an outright lie. And I'd take a lie detector test on that, and I'd challenge them to do that on thing.
All right. I'd love you all to respond.
Kevin, you want to take the first phone call?
It's completely false. I mean, I told Cindy that this was Kathy's mother's house. And she asked why. I said, well, we just picked a spot we thought was neutral. Can't do it at my office. We're not going to do it at Gene's office. We're not going to do it at Kathy's office. And Sharon's house is unavailable. So we picked a spot. I told her it was Kathy's mother's house.
Mm-hmm. You know, and this whole thing about Sharon Harris said, you know, if you don't resign.
In a low voice.
We'll go public. I mean, that is just untrue. Okay? We never said, if you resign, we're going to bury this. We're going to hide it. We never said that. We said we are definitely taking this to the district attorney. This is coming out.
I agree. It was perfectly clear. And I think Cindy Warren's comment as we were leaving said, if you want to clear out our schools, go ahead. She knew we were going public. I mean, there was no – it was perfectly clear.
Let me just play one more clip about this, because as we talked about it, there was a second point that Jeff made with respect to this. Let's play it.
You do this or we'll go public. I see that as coercing elected officials and trying to override an election. Wow. I really found it as complete, and I don't know whether the proper name is blackmail, extortion, or maybe just bad manners, but to sit there and come in there and say, you've got until tomorrow to this or we'll go public, that is the most egregious thing. I can't imagine somebody would do that, especially in a small town, or do that anywhere and think that somebody would do that. I mean, pretend they're correct. Imagine that if you resign, we won't tell anybody. This will be our secret among us girls. So, Jeff Warren, you can be part of our conspiracy. We won't tell anybody that a felony's been committed. I think that's disgusting.
That is ridiculous. You know, I mean, I think I've been going over and over and over this in my head for the last, 6 days since the board meeting and when these false accusations were made. And I've been going over and over in my head thinking, why are they doing this? What, you know, I just don't get it. And the only thing, I truly believe this now, is that we went to them a fully researched, comprehensive, you know, factually packed memo.
Well-written
memo. Setting forth our concerns, what our legal argument was, and I think they saw that, and I think they got really nervous, and they realized that they had no real basis to refute it, they didn't have a viable counterargument, and so I think they decided to just initiate these very public, personal attacks and false accusations to distract everyone from the issues. And let's talk about the issues. Let's talk about the recall. Let's talk about the Parr's retirement plan. Let's talk about the fact that Alan Gordon signed a document which, 6.5 months later, is now awarding him almost $200,000 in retirement benefits. Let's talk about that. I mean, does anyone truly believe that when Alan Gordon signed that addendum to the Parr's plan that he had no expectation that he was going to profit financially from it? I mean, let's talk about this.
The argument that the other side makes, and I want to sort of touch on this, and then I want to go back, because I want to bring our listeners sort of up to date on what the issue is, as you say. But the argument that Jeff made, and I assume that the board makes, is that all of this was a predetermined plan to get rid of Jim Zoll, and that it had nothing really to do with Alan Gordon.
Well, I think that I believe there was some truth to the fact that there was a desire to get rid of Jim Zoll. I don't think any of us ever denied that. But that doesn't mean that Alan Gordon didn't have his own ideas for how this was going to benefit him. And it doesn't change the fact that the law is very clear about conflicts of interest, and if there's a remote chance or
If there's any chance that he might profit from that contract, he has a conflict of interest.
He can't be involved. He can't set it up. He can't negotiate it. He can't sign it. He can't discuss it at the board meeting. He needs to be out of it. So,
did he negotiate it, or did Rob Haley negotiate it?
He signed documents. He was the one at the board meetings that explained it to the board. I mean, he was clearly involved.
We have a memo attached to our memo.
I'm going to tell you guys the same thing I told Jeff yesterday. I have had a chance to read the 10-page memo and some other documentation and some of the other, but I have not had a chance to look at the 80-some-odd pages of supporting documents.
Well,
I have not.
We wanted to make sure it was all there. So there is a memo that Alan Gordon sent out to all the teachers saying, hey, we're going to offer you this PARS plan. This is what you need for eligibility. And I think that's evidence that he was involved in the negotiation.
Uh-huh. And did he know that he would be a beneficiary? Did he know at that point that he was going to be retiring?
I'll answer that question.
Because that came up yesterday as well.
You know, that has been brought up before. So I took it upon myself to use the big email list. I sent out an email, talked about 25 different people.
Mm-hmm.
And of those 25 people, I got a good, well over half of them have had some experience, and I've detailed it. I've got a list here. One parent was approached by Gordon in the fall of 2008 asking to help him set up a trip in Bordeaux for the fall of 2009. Now, I don't see that someone who's starting a school year is going to be going to Bordeaux at the beginning of a year, but anyway, two other parents had met with him in the fall of 2008, followed up with an email in March saying what's going on. I've got a list. I don't think it's particularly exciting to go through
it. No.
And I've got the emails. So out of those 25 people,
what about the argument?
Everybody knew.
Right. Well, what about the argument? And I don't think I need to play this, but let me just sort of repeat what was said yesterday, which is that he really didn't retire until he retired. That, in fact, you know, he may have said it, he may have been toying with the idea, he may have been thinking about it, but it wasn't really a fait accompli until it was.
Well, California case law is really broad on what they call a financial interest in a contract. And it spans across so many situations. And you know, I've got quotes. There's a great case called People v. Honig, and it gives you a great primer on all of this stuff. And, you know, it comes down to things like, well, financial interest includes a contingent possibility of monetary benefit. It doesn't, you know, when he signed this thing or when he negotiated it, he didn't have to be absolutely certain he was retiring. If it was floating around in his mind and there was a possibility, you know, even the slightest expectation that he might be retiring or that he might get some kind of a financial benefit out of this thing, then, you know, it falls within the statute under the case law.
Let me play a comment from yesterday that addresses this, and I want you to comment on it further.
Okay, I'll leave if you'll give me this. Gordon takes it to the board. Jim Hassop's going, anything to get him out of here. This is perfect. The board agreed. They all wanted Julie Senior to come in. They would have liked Zola to stay, but they were happy that he was willing to go because this allowed them to move everybody up and save money. Save money. So they agreed to give him the PARS package, which is a very simple thing. You have to have an extension. You have to have an addendum. They added the PARS package at the next meeting, all noticed and everything. It was done. It was negotiated. It was there. It goes to the uncertified employees or whatever they're called, and that meant that Jim Zoll could get it, Alan Gordon could get it, Charlie Jones could get it, anybody who was an administrator could get it. It's going to be, it would be a very, very difficult thing for somebody to prove that Alan Gordon did this knowing he would benefit from it, but also because Rob Haley was the one, he negotiated the whole teacher's package. The PARS package with the teachers was negotiated by Rob Haley.
All right. Let's talk about that and sort of bring our listeners up to date a little bit on how this evolved, that there was this package for the teachers and then there was this addendum that brought in the non-classified employees, the administrators.
Mm-hmm.
Jean, Kathy, whoever.
Well, do you want to talk about it?
Well, do you want to just do the history? Okay, we could do the history. What happened, and this is, again, all in the memo, is originally what was proposed to the board was a retirement plan to help, I don't know, I guess, reorganize the district. So there were teachers that maybe were more expensive. They'd replace them with less expensive teachers, or if they had teachers that they didn't need anymore because our enrollment's declining. So the Teachers Association proposed this PARS plan, and in December, well, actually, you know what? You know the dates better than I do.
Well, I think it actually came up in September, yeah, was when it actually first came up. And so that's when it first shows up, I believe, it shows up on the agenda and the meeting minutes. And it is strictly for the teachers.
Okay? Right.
That's when it first comes up. And it gets negotiated with the teachers. I believe it is approved. Haley signed a couple of documents in October. And then the plan for the teachers was approved in the December 11th board meeting.
Right.
Okay, because Gordon came up and said, these six teachers have elected to do this.
Right.
And so that's when that came up. We have not seen anything in the minutes or the agendas that has, you know, that mentions this addendum or adding another class of employees to this plan, because
opening an enrollment,
yeah,
offering it to other management certificated employees, none of that.
Uh-huh.
The plan,
so it was just limited as it evolved at that point in October through December 11th of 2008. It was just limited to those six to the teachers, and then the six specific teachers,
yeah,
that
right,
took advantage of it.
To certificated non-management,
right,
employees.
And the enrollment window closed on November 21st. So they needed to
explain what that means, because that was something we talked about yesterday.
That means that the district proposes this retirement plan. They have to notice everybody in that class, in this case it was the teachers, of a particular the retirement age, and they then see who's interested, and they get all those teacher responses. They do a financial cost-benefit analysis, and then those teachers, and they decide whether they're going to offer it. But the teachers,
right,
have to have, the participants had to have enrolled by November 21st. Period. There's nothing that extends that date. That's it. November 21st, you needed to let them know.
Right.
Again, there was nothing else later that showed a cost-benefit analysis of what happens now if we add two administrators. There was...
Now, the addendum, the idea of an addendum to add two administrators, when was that put forth?
By the board?
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the agenda in the minutes. So it was signed on January 14th.
Mm-hmm.
They had a board meeting on January 15th. There's nothing in there saying they approved the addendum in the minutes.
Would it have been necessary for the addendum to have been noticed and in the minutes of a meeting?
Well, if the board is going to get together and make a decision, yes. It's, you know, the Brown Act requires you to put it on the agenda so that the public has noticed that this is what you're going to discuss and make a decision on. And the Brown Act, you know, it's very clear about this. And if the board is going to get together and have a meeting and make a decision like this and offer this PARS retirement program to a whole other class of employees, they should agendize it and discuss it at the meeting the same way they did for the teachers.
Was it a violation of the Brown Act to not do that?
And they discussed it?
Mm-hmm.
If they discussed it there, yes, I think it was.
And if they didn't discuss it, then who approved it and how did it get signed?
That's a very good question. I'd love to know the answer to that.
And the actual addendum was signed by?
Alan Gordon.
When?
January 14th.
Mm-hmm. And it never shows up on any of the minutes of any of the meetings prior to that.
No. The only thing I saw about a plan being offered to another class of employees was in March. And it was on the agenda in March that they were going to talk about offering the PARS plan to classified employees. And the agenda minutes for that March meeting state that they pulled that item off the agenda at the meeting due to lack of interest.
And let's make it clear, classified employees are not management.
Uh-huh. Right. Talk a little bit about what all of this means in sort of the larger scheme of things, and what is the culpability of the board if in fact this is the case. It was a violation of the Brown Act. It was never noticed, never publicly put forth, and signed by Alan Gordon in January.
Well, I mean, I think this is stark evidence of the fact that the board is not acting transparently, and it is not fulfilling its duty to provide oversight for the citizens of what's going on in the district. And it's very disconcerting, you know, when you think that possibly the board might be asleep at the wheel, and they're not telling anybody in the public what's going on. And, you know, this was, you know, this all started, like we said, you know, this, with the groundswell started with the whole superintendent issue. And now all these other things are being uncovered, and, you know, and they're telling us we're being divisive. Well, you know, we didn't know these things, and, you know, all of this is coming to light, and you know, they need to answer some questions instead of running around saying you're being divisive. They need to answer these questions. They need to be transparent. They need to address this PARS plan issue. And, you know, I mean, this is almost $350,000 in retirement benefits.
Let me put Gene, I want to play another clip from yesterday that specifically relates to something that Jeff says that he said to you, so related to this subject, so let's listen to that.
I turned to Gene DeVincenzi and I said, assuming you're correct, because, you know, it is fair to bring these things up. It's absolutely fair to bring up any question. If you've done your research, you want to do it, it's fair to bring it up. No. I said, assuming you're correct, could the board go back, and they still wanted to give retirement packages to these guys because they figured they deserved it. Could they go back and restructure it and do it in a way that would make you, that it was well noticed and that you had input and that everything was involved? She said, no. She said, they've resigned. They've resigned. They can't do it now.
That's exactly right.
Well, they resigned because they thought they were going to get the retirement package, so I wouldn't go over that one. But the point was, we weren't there to solve any problem. We were there to take, I mean, they were presenting to the board, to two members of the board, an ultimatum. It was blackmail. I mean, I don't know what the law is. Well, you say, are you trying to say that they didn't say, or will go public?
I'll let you take a shot.
Yeah, I don't know where to start with that.
I'm not sure either, but okay. Take a shot.
Okay, so the beginning of that clip was the comment from Jeff, can they go back and fix all of this? And I think the answer is no. And the reason the answer is no is because Alan Gordon has a conflict of interest. So that addendum that had the effect of including him in a class as a beneficiary, that's void. So I don't know how you can go back and fix all that and give notice about this new class, the administration and the retirement. I don't know how you do that. So I think the answer still is no. Can they go back and have a public, put it on the agenda, have public comment? Sure. They can do that, and I think that's what they're going to try to do.
I was just going to say, my understanding is, from talking to people today, that is exactly what the plan is for Monday.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if they're going to go ahead and do that on Monday, and they're not even going to seriously address the conflict of interest situation, then I think then they're really not interested in the best interest of the kids. They need to address that issue, and not by a lawyer who said he had an initial review of the memo, but by someone who's not trying to defend themselves because he purportedly gave him the advice over the year. They need someone, they need to seriously consider it, and they need, and if they made a mistake, they made a mistake. I easily admit when I make mistakes, and it looks like I made a mistake on the date that Zoll retired. It has no meaning whatsoever in this whole analysis, but we also couldn't find out the date when Zoll retired. It's not anywhere where we could discover it, but that's beside the point.
Can they go back, though, and sort of start the process over again? In other words, void the existing addendum and essentially start the process over with Rob Haley signing off on it as opposed to Alan Gordon signing off on it?
I think we tried to I don't know if they can. I mean, they had to have opened it up to the whole class. Mm-hmm. So they have to give notice to all the administrators who were there last year. I mean, I guess I don't really know the answer to that. Given the timing, it seems hard to believe that they'd be able to do that. Mm-hmm. If they wanted to add on to those existing teachers, so I guess I kind of answered my question there. If they wanted to attach this plan to the existing teacher plan, I don't think they could do that because those teachers, that plan is valid and those teachers have retired. If they want to do a separate plan now for the administrators, I don't think they could do it because it shows a cost to the district. It doesn't benefit the district. Just if you're doing the analysis of these two employees only, and the Maybe you should.
Well, I think Kevin can
speak
to the cost benefit analysis.
Yeah, I mean,
in fact, Kevin, in explaining that, explain why this is important, because I think we've left this out. Why it's important to the process that when you put these plans forth, that it sort of requires that it show that there is a cost benefit to the district.
Yeah. So as we understand, the PARS plan over a 5-year period has to show a cost savings to the district. And clearly, having the 6 teachers included in that analysis saves the district money. When you throw in Zoll and Gordon in the analysis, for which they were not included in the original plan, the district saves less money. So it's actually costing the district to have the administrators included in the plan. So if the original plan still exists, which it does, the teachers get what they get, they negotiate and everything, and if they created a separate plan for just the administrators, the management team, they don't have a cost savings. They're costing the district money.
What about a new addendum to that original plan?
Well, I mean, I suppose if you swept them into the other 6, yeah, they still save money. And Katrina Howard from the district showed a schedule that shows that they save $1.2 million. I don't think that's not being disputed.
Right.
That includes all 8 people. But if you take out the administrators, they save less money.
Mm-hmm. It's what, $1.3 million or something like that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. So arguably they could go back and do it correctly and maybe make it right.
I suppose.
I'm still not convinced because Alan was so involved in the if they're just going to amend, he was so involved in that original plan.
Right.
I don't see how that conflict would go away just because this little addendum at the end is done by Rob Haley. But again, I guess.
Kathy?
Well, I mean, you know, these guys have already retired. And I think, you know, my impression is a lot of people in the community are going to have a hard time when the board calls a new meeting and says, okay, we're just going to redo this, and, you know, we're still going to give them the $350,000 in retirement benefits. I mean, I think the public is going to, you know, members of the public are going to come up and say, wait a minute, you know, Gordon worked for, what, a little over 4 years, and you're going to give him $180,000 in retirement benefits? Yeah, I want that gig.
and we wanted to get rid of Zoll, so we're going to give him $150,000. Yeah. Heaven forbid we just give him a bad review and have him leave the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they get that on top of their state pension.
You know, on April 9th, when it was announced that Gordon was retiring, and they said they talked about this PAR plan and Gordon being involved in it, and he was going to stay on as a contract employee. That PARS plan was not presented as compensation to him for working on a contract basis. It is now, which I find interesting enough. Uh-huh. But, you know, what's the motivation of giving Alan Gordon $180,000? That's what clear. It is not clear to me. And what muddies the water is the fact that he signed the very document that he benefits from.
Right.
Okay, so they presented at a board meeting on April 9th saying, and Cindy Warren says, you're going to work for free? I'm going to work for free. And then later on, maybe 6 weeks later, Gordon comes out and says, no, I'm getting this because my STIRS plan or whatever, and I'm actually doing this because I'm getting compensated for the work I'm doing on the county taxes and the SELPA issue and the legislation for basic aid. Huh, that's interesting. That's not what you presented to the public on April 9th.
Right.
So what is the motivation of the $180,000? Who signed, who approved it? Who discussed it within the board? Did the board sign on it? Did the board know?
Did the board know? I mean,
exactly.
That is one of
what
the
What did they know and when did they know?
Right. I think that's how I started the conversation yesterday with Jeff Warren. My understanding, actually, from some conversations I had today is that the real problem to reopening it and to going back and redoing it is that it's tough because both Zoll and Gordon are already retired.
Yeah, exactly.
They're retired already, so you can't – that's really what the big issue is out there.
Yeah.
Well, that and plus there's $350,000 being sucked out of our school system.
While tutoring programs are being canceled and private
debtors exactly.
Are having
to come forward. We talked about complacency last November, thinking things were being done correctly. The complacency has been lost. It's out the window because, maybe the board isn't giving us the oversight we elected them to be or to do. So now we're asking questions. And, again, as Kathy said, we're now fighting a different fight here. We're we're fighting about, you know, whether we extorted them or not. Or it's just it's ridiculous as far as I can tell.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Let me ask each of you, where do you think all of this is going? What's next? What do you want to see happen? What do you think will happen? Your sort of instant analysis of it. Kathy, start with you.
I think what's going to happen is this recall is going to go forward. I think, you know, like Kevin said, there's a groundswell. People are joining en masse in this thing, and people are getting involved, and people are tired of, you know, not being listened to, and they're tired of the lack of transparency and the fiscal irresponsibility and the administrative bloat. And so I think what's going to happen is this recall is going full speed ahead. What I hope would happen is that this board, you know, at some point has some kind of epiphany and realizes that, you know, they can't operate the way they've been operating, that they need to address this PARS retirement plan, that they need a, you know, an independent third party to investigate this conflict of issue, in interest issue. I mean, that's my hope. So,
Jean?
Well, I know the recall is going to be successful. We have talked to all aspects of the community, and we have just broad support. This Saturday morning at 10 at Crane Park, we're having a rally. The petitions have been approved, and we're going to start circulating them. So we're going to move forward.
The petitions have been approved.
Actually, yes.
That came up today, and I didn't know the answer.
Yeah, we have the petitions. We've had them copied. We're going to, again, meet on Saturday morning at 10, and we have so many people who are excited to start gathering signatures. I got a couple signatures yesterday, and both asked me for packets so they could go collect more on their own, which is great. You know,
and do you think people will continue to be afraid to sign them to relate
the petitions,
to something we talked about?
This is
earlier?
Really important. Everybody needs to realize that your signatures on a petition are completely confidential. Nobody can ever know. So we respect that, and you can sign it. I mean, you may not want to – if people are afraid to go public and say, I'm going to be on the list of supporters, but they can sign the petition. We're making sure that they understand that, and we're respecting that. And so, yeah, people are signing. Even if they're scared, they're going to sign it, and we're going to be successful. And in the meantime, we're going to stay caring, involved parents, and we're going to work with the administration. We're going to work with the teachers. We support the teachers. We don't want to cut their salaries. We want to give them what they need. We want to give them more for their classrooms. That's what we want to do, and that's what we will do.
Kevin, you get the last word.
I just echo what they say. We're also having a workshop this evening with some of signers that show them how to sign a petition. It's going to be, we're going to mask out the signature so they remain confidential. We're moving forward to all of our issues that we have, whether it be fiscal irresponsibility or intimidation or whatever it is, we're moving forward. We're very confident we're going to get the signatures. I think that's about it.
One last thing. I encourage everybody to focus on the facts.
Yes.
And, the issues are what's important here.
Exactly.
And real quickly, any of you, the memorandum that we talked about earlier that details all of this did go to the district attorney's office. What are you expecting, or are you expecting a response?
I got a call from Jane Hinshaw at the district attorney's office on Monday, and she told me that they were taking a look at it and wanted us to know that they were taking it seriously. So.
All right. Kathy Zelazny, Gene DiVincenzi, Kevin Alfaro, I thank you all three for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.